Welcome to On the Beat, where we bring you a different Buffalo Bills beat reporter every week, exclusively on the Overreaction Sports Network.
Well, what is going on, everybody? Welcome. Welcome, everybody, into On the Beat, brought to you exclusively, as Bruce Nolan just said, on the Overreaction Sports Network, a show where we bring you an exclusive interview with a different Bills beat reporter each week, and we talk about some of the topics swirling around our beloved Buffalo Bills. I am Joe Miller, and you can find me on Twitter at Joe Miller Wired alongside my co-host today, former Buffalo Bills offensive line Swiss Army knife, Jerry Ostrowski. We're excited that you are here with us. Please do us a favor. Please like, please subscribe, whatever platform you are consuming this vidcast or podcast on, whether it's live right now or it's later on when it drops as a podcast. Please like, please subscribe. Like we always like to say, or at least I do, whether this podcast finds you around a cup of coffee at the gym with your AirPods in, on the drive to work, or watching us live right now, let me just say one more time, welcome. Super duper good show for you today. As on this episode of On the Beat, we've got Jay Skursky, Bills beat reporter for the Buffalo News. You can find him on Twitter at Jay Skursky. Jay, it is absolutely awesome to have you. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you guys very much for for having me, and good luck with this new format. I'm excited to see. I think you already had my buddy Matt on, and excited to see who follows me. So thanks a lot for including me.
Yeah, well, I'm just excited we got a fellow Polish guy on with me. I'm excited for that. So he can do no wrong. He can say whatever he wants. I'm just going to sit back and listen to my friend speak.
Absolutely. Well, yes, thank you. We represent Park, so.
Listen, my wife is full-on purebred AKC registered Polish. So her maiden name is Jankowski, and her mom's maiden name was Plandowski. So she's got it like from both sides. Actually, interesting story. Her grandparents on her dad's side are straight off the boat. Her dad was in the Polish army and fought against the Germans and was captured. Her grandpa and grandma met in a Polish, I believe, concentration camp, German Nazi concentration camp, and then made their way over to the States after the war, which is pretty wild. So,
growing up in Lewiston, my great grandfather, who lived until he was 101, and my grandmother would speak Polish growing up. I wish I would have learned a little bit more of it or retained it. But yeah, same idea. Very my great grandfather came through Ellis Island, and I've seen his name there. So yeah, let's go back a ways here as well.
That is cool that you've seen his name at Ellis Island. So same thing. Yeah, her grandpa didn't speak. So I met him when we had first got married. He was still alive. He passed not too long ago. But broken English. But her dad was bilingual. So her dad didn't speak, I don't think, English. He was born in the States, but didn't actually speak English until he was, I think, in grade school or something like that, which is pretty crazy. So, yeah.
And I grew up in Philadelphia, and I now live in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where they have no Polish people down here. So.
They don't know what Dingus Day is. You got to explain to them.
No, they have only one gentleman does. And that was a professor at the University of Tulsa that my son had for a few classes. But then again, he's from the Northeast as well. So,
yeah,
it's all good.
All right, so let's dive right in. We're going to talk about a couple different topics. Obviously, we've got to talk about the draft, the Buffalo Bills draft. And I know that you've been getting hammered. You were just on Ty Dunn's podcast. I think it dropped today. I listened to about half of that. I got through half of it before I had some other stuff I had to do. And it's what everybody's talking about. It's the heat of the moment. And then I do want to just address a couple things from wide receiver. I've got some questions just for you in particular. But when you look at this draft, just off the top, what moves or what draft pick, what did you like from the draft that the Bills did this year?
Well, I liked a lot of it. I mean, I thought they filled needs. And, you know, I know you talk a lot about best player available, and, you know, that's what Brandon Bean always tells you. But it's got a funny way of working out where, you know, the best player available just so happens to fit where they need them, right? And, you know, there's a lot of talk about Keon Coleman at the top of the draft, but we all know they needed a receiver. Now, you know, the key for Brandon, I'm sure we'll talk a lot about this, but the key for Brandon Bean is he's got to pick the right one. There's a lot of those guys that were in that, you know, late first, early second category of wide receivers, and that exactly played out that way. So, you know, however you feel about Coleman, if you didn't love that pick, maybe that, you know, colors the way you view the rest of the draft, but you know, I thought day two made a lot of sense with Cole Bishop, a guy that I think could start as early as week one. Dwayne Carter, I think, you know, right behind Ed Oliver is, you know, a valuable depth piece, a rotational piece. And then even into day three, I think they got guys that can play early in their careers, whether that's the linebacker from Washington on special teams. Ray Davis is going to be active probably week one, right? You know, you even go to the center in the fifth round, Van Prangranger. I don't think he's going to be necessarily playing week one or active, but the more I read about him, the more I think, boy, they might have found something here in the fifth round, right? So I think they did a nice job of getting a mix of early contributors and guys that, you know, there's some developmental promise there. You know, you look at even at the end of the draft, late in the draft, you know, the option for a punt returner, maybe with Hardy, you know, the seventh rounder is a story, and we love stories at the Buffalo News and in the print media. You know, if you get to write about something that's interesting, that's good too. So I think that the draft accomplished a lot of needs for them. I mean, you know, they used 10 picks. It's the biggest draft class that Brandon Bean has had. We knew that this team needed to get younger. We knew that they needed to add depth in places. I think he accomplished a lot of his goals. Now, of course, it becomes, you know, how these guys translate to the field. And you know, we're not gonna know that for quite a while.
Jay, I got to ask you a question about Coleman. And, you know, 20 years old, he'll be 21 soon. He's young, right? Obviously, you've been in the press conferences. You've seen some things. Has fun with his interviews. Kind of a goof. You know, just kind of off the cuff, has fun. But I watch Nightcap quite a bit, and I don't know if you know what Nightcap is. It's Shannon Sharp and Ocho Cinco's podcast, and they had a specific piece just on Keon Coleman, and their view of this was the way he was talking about, you know, being frugal and about, you know, McDonald's and his jacket, and you get it at Macy's. They said, with what he has and where he is, he's actually beyond his age as far as maturity goes. And they believe if he stays on that path and he, you know, displays what he's already displayed in his short amount of time in Buffalo, they think he could be a top 10 guy in year two. How do you take him, and how do you portray him? And there are, you know, you've had just a few interactions with him. How do you take all that?
Well, you know, it struck me how comfortable he was around us in the media. That was the first thing that stood out to me, the way he came in and said hello to us and really seemed to be enjoying the whole thing. Sometimes when you even guys, you know, in the best moments of their lives right after getting drafted, they talk to us like, you know, it's like we're pulling teeth or not even that just that they're not maybe super comfortable in that setting. That was the complete opposite for him. I mean, he came in and owned the room, you know, in a good way. And, you know, what does that have to do with anything on the football field? Nothing, right? I mean, you know, we've had guys, Dalton Kincaid, last year's first round pick, is probably not the most glamorous interviewer or interviewee, I guess, right? I mean, he doesn't right. give you a lot, but it, you know, doesn't matter on the football field. But in terms of Coleman, you know, I think it might, I fear is maybe a strong word, but I wonder if it might, you know, his goofiness, for lack of a better word, and I don't mean that in an insulting way.
Right.
I wonder if his goofiness might mask, you know, just what kind of a player this guy is, right? And maybe what, you know, some of the bigger decisions that he's made in his life. Like, he's talked about, you know, this guy was a high-level athlete, right? He was playing Division I basketball at Michigan State. I mean, that's not easy to do. And he decided to give that up, you know, and that's not easy, right? I mean, he grew up playing basketball. He loved playing basketball, probably at one day dreamed about being in the NBA, only wanted to go to a college that would recruit him to play both. And eventually he made the mature decision to say, I'm going to pursue football. He transferred from Michigan State. That's not easy to do, right? And I know transferring is way more prevalent now with the portal and all of that in college, and we see it all the time. But nevertheless, he wanted to go to a new place, challenge himself, learn a new offense, and he did all of that, right? And so I think he's made mature decisions in his life, and I don't think that his quote-unquote goofiness should distract from, hey, this guy worked really hard. He's a super talented guy to get to where he is, and I think he's determined now to make the most of this. One little example of that stands out to me is Andre Reed tweeting just the other day that Keon Coleman had taken it upon himself to reach out to ask, hey, what do I have to do to be great in Buffalo? I love that. I mean, I absolutely love that. And if he did that on his own, that speaks volumes to me, right? Because the guy gets it. He cares enough to say, who is really great at the position in the city that I'm going to? Okay, Andre Reed's in the Hall of Fame. I want to ask him how he did it. I think that shows a lot from Keon Coleman. I think those are early positive signs.
Yeah, that's super good. When you look at Keon Coleman and that draft, as far as him being taken 33rd overall in the second round, Brandon Bean got peppered by you guys after the first round in his press conference. You know, obviously he made it clear that he made no calls, it made no decision, made no attempt to even to get up into the top 10. However, he inferred and pretty much said, I was trying to move up. Clearly, we all like suspect or speculate that he was going after Brian Thomas Jr. Brian, he couldn't get up there. You would again assume that he's offering, you know, several, his two fourths or several fifths, because he didn't have a third and they all wanted a second. And he's like, I'm not giving you a second. They didn't have a third at that time. Brian Thomas was gone, how do you feel they managed the rest of that way down to Keon Coleman? Do you think that he was their second target? Because Brandon Bean said, I always like to get my guy. I like to go to bed on Thursday night knowing I got my guy. Well, they didn't really get the guy that they were after. They didn't get the Dalton Kincaid. They didn't get the guy that they, you know, normally they've got the one guy they want. How do you feel he managed that process of trading back? Obviously, I don't really care about the Xavier Worthy piece with the Chiefs, but then moving back to 33. Do you feel like it was a little bit of a, not punch drunk, but like a little bit of a, how did you feel they navigated it, I guess is the easiest way to ask that question.
Well, I think it's interesting that you say that you don't care about the Worthy piece. I would push back a little bit on that in the sense that, listen, these guys are going to be compared throughout their careers. Xavier Worthy and Keon Coleman are going to be compared. And whether it, maybe even take Keon Coleman out of the equation for a second, what Xavier Worthy is going to do is going to be closely followed in Buffalo, because Brandon Bean could have had him and didn't want him. He decided that that wasn't the guy for him. And I think that's a gutsy call. You know, I think in terms of how he navigated moving from 28 to 32 down to 33, what it screams to me, and you kind of mentioned it there, was he didn't love anybody that was there. If you did, you'd take him, right? And we've seen him do this before. If you recall, when they drafted James Cook, he traded down twice before he did that as well. And that was at the bottom of the second round. So what it says to me, and this is going on 7 years worth of reading Brandon Bean's body language, kind of trying to figure out what he's saying and what he's not saying. My strong inclination is they were out of first rounders when 28 came up. And they probably were out for a while, because he made it sound like, yeah, there just wasn't, we didn't have anybody with a first round grade. And if that's the case, if that's true, then I think he did a nice job moving down, you know, what the equivalent of a full round with the Chiefs. He moves up 50 something spots. He moves up with Carolina to move one spot. Once you go from 28 to 32, all you need to do is like two players at that point, right? If you're going to go to 33. So yeah. I have no problem at all with the 32 to 33 move. Clearly he had two guys that he was happy taking. And even if Carolina took one of them, he'd get the other. So let's say it was Leggett who goes at 32. Well, okay, fine. We're still taking Keon Coleman at 33. The move down from 28 to 32 is the one that we're going to dissect. We're going to analyze. We're going to talk about. Mm-hmm. And I can see both sides of it. If you're a fan, and I was the one that asked them, did you have any misgivings at all about doing a deal with the Chiefs, given who they are, given what they've been to you? It's the rival. It's the team you can't get past. There's a school of thought there that says, I'm not going to help them. I don't care about anything. I'm just not helping them. Right. You know, the way that he answered that wasn't even a consideration in his mind. He thought, I'm doing what's best for the Buffalo Bills. I think that's how you want your general manager to think. I mean, certainly it is, right? But don't get it twisted. I mean, they are going to analyze. I'm going to, you guys are going to talk about it. We're going to compare Xavier Worthy and we're going to compare Keon Coleman really throughout their careers, right or wrong. And I think it is right, because the opportunity was there for the Bills to take Xavier Worthy, take, you know, one of the most, you know, electrifying, if you want to use that word, based on the 40 time, the receivers in the draft. And they said, no, that's not the style of receiver we want. We want this guy. okay, I like the gumption, but now you've got to be right.
Yeah, I was impressed with the peppering of questions from the room. What was the energy like in the room? Because obviously we've seen times where there's an aspect of, as fans, we're watching the press conference and we're like, ask more questions, dig deeper. And then like, it kind of moves on to the next thing because it's kind of it's a difficult subject, but you guys were looking for answers as far as that goes. Was there an energy in the room that was a little different, or was it all in the up and up and you guys were just asking questions that were there?
No, I think, I think everything was good. The energy that I got from Bean was one of slight disappointment, honestly. I think he was disappointed that they were out of first rounders. I think he wants to get his guy, as you said, and that's so right. You know, you go back to the last couple of drafts, moving up a couple spots for Elam, moving up a couple spots for Kincaid. When he's got guys that he believes are first round talents, he wants to go get them. He wasn't able to do that in this draft. I firmly believe that. And so that was the vibe that I got from Bean. I was sitting 3 feet away from him, right in the front. And I really got the sense that there was a little bit of disappointment on his part that, you know, when it got time to 28, the guys that he graded as first rounders were gone.
Jay, do you think that trading back, though, and I think Brandon Bean even said this multiple times before the draft started, he let it be known, like, look, we don't have 28 first round grades in this room. Do you think that going into it, while he may have been disappointed, they pretty much knew in the back of their minds that trading back, maybe not twice, but at least once, was always going to be their plan all along?
I think it definitely should have been an option, probably was an option. The other thing that that stands out to me was he really wanted to get back into the third round. He was not happy with the NFL about not getting the compensatory third. He was furious about that, right, quite honestly. And I think they really valued that, you know, that third round really in its entirety, but they wanted to get back into the third. I think that was important for them. And so, you know, they found a way to do it. I also think the second part of that is I think a lot of the grades that we saw on these receivers in terms of late first, early second was pretty accurate. And I think that's about a lot of those guys graded too. And so when he talked about trading back, if you listen closely, I believe it was on Thursday night, he said that they had offers to move even farther back. He didn't want to do that. I think that their cutoff was probably around the range of like 36 to 38. He wasn't going to go below that because he was worried at that point, probably about not getting a receiver. You know, you looked at McConkie goes right after that. Leggett had gone 32. So there was a run there of three in a row, including Coleman. So he didn't want to drop, I would say, out of the 30s at all, because, you know, I think by that point, he would have been worried about those guys being gone.
Another question I have to ask you, and this is something Joe and I were just discussing on Sunday night. It would seem to me Bean and this crew is really, really good, or they really, really enjoy the deception of who they're going to take, right? I don't think they ever went and did a – and now if I'm asking this because if I'm wrong, please tell me. I don't think they ever went and did a one-on-one workout with Coleman. They did with Leggett.
Right.
And then there was a ton of smoke. You know, I know Coleman came in the top 30. There was varying stories about that. Everything seemed to be Leggett. I think this crew really enjoys smoke. I mean, what he's saying probably is not true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or remotely true.
Yeah, if you look at the receivers that they did the most work on in terms of, you know, reported meetings, 30 visits, combine, private workouts, all of that, you know, it might be Walker from North Carolina and Troy Franklin from Oregon. They did a lot of work on those two guys, and it was pretty fascinating that they passed on both of them, you know, beyond the first round multiple times. And
right,
he's passed on them, what, you know, two times, the second and third round after Coleman was taken. And I think Walker, maybe the same thing. I don't remember exactly where he ended up going. I think he was in the fourth round as well, though, too. So, you know, for the fans, and this is something that I actually wrote about today that'll be in the Buffalo News tomorrow. I think there are some fans who are coming away from this draft slightly disappointed that they didn't double dip at the position, you know, even after taking Coleman, that they didn't turn around in that third round. It does show you, though, I think two things. One, Bean maybe wasn't as high on this class as the rest of, the outsiders were, whether that's the pre-draft rankings that you see in various different places or just fans themselves. Clearly he wasn't, right? Because he passed over those guys that I just mentioned in the third round. And then I think there's the next part of that is that maybe there's a little bit more internal belief in who they do have than what there is externally. Now, again, I think that is Brandon Bean betting big on his room, and he better be right about that, right? Because on paper, even with Keon Coleman, I think you can look at the wide receiver room, and if you're looking at position groups around the league, comparing them receivers to receivers, or you're even just looking at position groups within the Bills, you may be unsettled. And I think that would be justifiable based on who they've got at that position. So I think, I think Brandon Bean has a lot riding, every draft's got a lot riding on it, right? But yeah. Brandon Bean's got a lot at stake in terms of Keon Coleman being the right guy and then not coming back and addressing the position again.
Yeah. Talking with Jay Skursky from the Buffalo News, Buffalo Bills beat reporter. That's a great segue and kind of moving into that motion of wide receivers. You look at there's some energy on the wire and on Twitter today as Zay Jones got released by the Jacksonville Jaguars, which is funny that they basically replaced, a former Buffalo Bill with another former Buffalo Bill, which I think is kind of funny. But to your point, the current wide receiver depth chart, Khalil Shakir, Keon Coleman, Curtis Samuel, is okay, right? I don't think anybody's like, clamoring for those guys. And then after that, it's Mac Hollins, Justin Shorter, who we haven't seen yet, 97% catch rate last year, which we were all excited about, didn't see the field. Andy Isabella, KJ Hamler, Quintez Cephas, who they just picked up, Tyrell Shavers, Brian Thomas. When you look at, and you said it, room to room to room, as far as the wide receivers goes, this is probably not as weak as 2018 for Josh Allen, but it's probably pretty close. I would say that there's not a whole lot of people outside of Buffalo. We love our Buffalo Bills, and this fan base gets to know their guys, and they get to know the guys that are on the team. They do the research, so we love our guys. But outside of Buffalo, the people in Seattle, the fans in Seattle aren't going to really know almost any of those names. And when you look at the drafts by the Buffalo Bills as it pertains to wide receiver 2018, Brandon Bean, I don't believe is here, Austin Prohl in the seventh round. 2019, they didn't draft a wide receiver. 2020, Gabe Davis in the fourth. Isaiah Hodgins in the sixth, who went to the Giants, got pulled by the Giants, had a very productive back half of a season. Last year, didn't see much action. I call it football politics, but it is what it is. Marquez Stevenson in the sixth in 2021. 2022, Khalil Shakir, round five. 23, Justin Shorter, we just mentioned. And then obviously 2024, Keon Coleman. And I guess where I'm going with all of this, it doesn't feel to me like that position group has been managed super well from a draft standpoint. How do you feel just about the way maybe Brandon has kind of assembled that room? Obviously going and getting John Brown, Cole Beasley, and Stephon Diggs. But when you talk about like the Green Bay Packers mentality of like, we're just going to keep drafting talent. We're just going to keep drafting talent until guys hit.
Yeah.
Do you feel like he did a good job or has done a good job? And we all love Brandon Bean. I'm not trying to dig on him. I'm just looking at this room in particular.
Well, no, I mean, listen, we can talk about Brandon Bean's hits and misses, and it's not digging on him. I mean, he gets it. It comes with the territory. I mean, there's legitimate criticism that can be found with some of Brandon Bean's decisions, and he would tell you the exact same thing. I mean, I've been critical of his day two picks in the draft for a while now. Now, last year, Osiris Torrance hits, right? That makes up for missing on Cody Ford, right? Mm. And, Devin Singletary, how do you view him versus some of the other guys in the second.
Zach Moss.
That's right. Some of those other guys in the second and third rounds, the success rate, Zay Jones, he's talk about a second rounder that maybe didn't pan out as well. Right. So I think that I would have liked to have seen them double dip at the position here this year. I thought in the third or fourth round, maybe you come back to receiver. They chose otherwise. It reminds me a little bit of the defensive line room, quite frankly. The opposite, the difference there is that he's thrown a lot of resources at the D-line room, and that hasn't necessarily worked out. The wide receiver room, he hasn't thrown as many. I do think you have to count the trade for Diggs as sort of using a draft asset, right? It was a first-round pick for the most part that acquired him, and that really did hit. Shakir is looking like a really nice pick in the fifth round, but the counter to that is, well, why didn't you do it again? Why didn't you try to find the next Khalil Shakir in this year's draft? You had four fifth rounders. Mm. been talked about as being a deep draft. That's kind of where I, you know, going back to what I said earlier about, you know, Brandon Bean needs Keon Coleman to hit badly in this class because, you know, this is it in terms of draft resources, draft capital. You said Keon Coleman is our guy. We're not doing anything else. Now, we'll see. You know, I think Zay Jones could come in and probably be the number four receiver here, and that would be okay. And that's not just, you know, nostalgia or wanting a guy who used to play here, which, you know, we often seem like we do here in Buffalo. But I think that's kind of probably the move that you're looking at, because what did Brandon Bean say on Saturday night after the draft concluded? Without being asked, mind you, unprompted, he said, if anybody's waiting for a trade, it's not happening, right? And so this is probably pretty close to what it's going to look like week one when they roll the ball out. Maybe there is a veteran on a lower-priced contract that comes available after June 1st or, you know, during final cuts, something like that. But for the most part, I think your top three is Coleman, Samuel, and Shakir. And we'll see, because that group has a lot to prove.
Jay, I have to ask you this question, and you know, the Bills are in the cap situation they're in, okay? It's not going away, and you got to eat a huge number for Stephon Diggs this year. Next year, there'll probably be more cap issues or considerations considering how Von Miller plays and some other stuff. But when you look at the cap and the fact that they don't have the bank to go out and just be able to draft all these free agents they want to draft to fill holes, if you really look at it, the kind of – counteract the double dip at wide receiver, every one of these picks, to me anyway, except for maybe a couple, and one of them is a international practice, you know, international player, but when you look at every one of them, they all filled an actual need that the Bills have.
Yeah.
And my question to you is this: a lot of people felt we were a couple wide receivers away from breaking the ice and getting to the Super Bowl. I felt we still had other areas that needed help, and that maybe Bean didn't believe this roster was just a couple wideouts away. Do you think this draft is indicative of that thought process?
Well, I think it's beyond just this draft. I think this draft is. I think this offseason in its entirety is, right? I mean, this is a – Brandon Bean said this again on Saturday night, and it's going to, spoiler alert, lead one of my articles later this week. This is a team in transition. That is a pretty significant statement, right? That tells you what we were doing was not working. It wasn't sustainable from a salary cap financial perspective. It also wasn't sustainable from an age production standpoint either, right? And so to hear Brandon Bean say this is a team in transition is, in my mind, really, really significant, because you don't often hear that about teams that you would say are Super Bowl favorites, right, or Super Bowl contenders. And I fully expect the Bills are going to be, you know, a playoff team, that they're going to be in contention. But if you were to tell me that they were building more for 2025, I wouldn't necessarily argue with you. You don't eat $31 million in dead money for a guy, the most in league history, by the way, for a non-quarterback. You don't eat that if you're trying to be competitive, as competitive as you can in 2024, right?
Yep.
So that move at least is made with one eye toward 2025. And so to hear Brandon Bean say this is a team in transition, to me, says – we're trying to do the things that we can to be competitive. We want to, you know, fight for a playoff spot. We want to win the AFC East again. We want to do all those things, but we want to sustain this for long term. We want to maybe reload and see a year or two down the road our window as being a little bit more open than maybe it is going into 2024. Now, he'll never say that, but that's just the way that I read the tea leaves based on this offseason in its entirety.
Yeah, the window's definitely not closed. It's just not quite as open as it was before. I think one of the most unsettling things about this year, and this speaks to Brandon Bean and the job that he does, and it's because of the cap situation, the depth is just lacking. And I think that's the unsettling part as Bills Mafia now, is like we're so used to just being like, and then we got this guy, and behind him is that guy, and like over here is like four guys. And now it's very much kind of like a, well...
Yeah.
What kind of see?
Well, yeah. I mean, what happens if one of those top three receivers goes down?
Right.
Who are you? I mean, those three, I think you can confidently say Samuel's made plays in this league. Shakir, we saw at the end of last year, is a player. Keon Coleman comes in with the pedigree of a, you know, first round, whatever, you know, the first pick of the second round class, right? He's got talent. We know he's going to be on the field. If they lose one of those guys, what are you relying on? It's a big question. And so I agree with you entirely that the depth is it, what happens if Cole Bishop isn't ready in week one, right? And it's possible. I mean, I think I predicted earlier that he's going to be a week one starter. I still think that he will, but that's a lot to put on any rookie, right? And so there are spots, you know, cornerback being another one of them. You've got Benford and Douglas. You feel pretty good about your outside boundary cornerbacks as your starters. If one of those guys rolls an ankle, Kyrie Elam has to come into the game. Are you trusting him at this point? So I think there's more questions on this roster than there was at this time a year ago. I also want to say here, though, that I don't think that getting younger is necessarily a bad thing. And in Nope. fact, I think in a lot of ways it can be a good thing. And so that's why I'm willing to let this thing play out.
Jay, I got to ask you, and Jay Skursky joins us, Bills beat writer for the Buffalo News. And Jay, I got to ask you this. Bean used the word, I said this, we talked about this on Sunday night. Bean used the word probably 25 times in the press conference on his wrap up the draft presser. And that was the word dog. I don't think I've ever heard him say the word dog as many times as he has. And it kind of goes along with what you were just saying, youth, excitement, competition, a levity to the team. Dogs, is this kind of the way, or maybe the message coming out of One Bills Drive that is part of that youth movement? We're trying to get this thing a little more upbeat. We're trying to get the negativity gone, and we're trying to compete, and we're trying to and ultimately, even though it is a multi-million-dollar business, have fun.
I agree with that a lot. It's a point that I hadn't maybe 100% considered until you were talking about it. But now that it's going through my mind, it makes a lot of sense. I think one other part of that that I think kind of dovetails with it a little bit is the amount of team captains that they drafted and leaders of their college programs. I think the next wave of leaders, they hope that they found some of those in this draft. Now, again, not all of them are going to hit, but a lot of team captains, a lot of really impressive stories, right? Van Pranger starting 44 games at Georgia and playing the most snaps on a national championship team. The linebacker from Washington walking onto the team, and everything you read about him is how not a single person on that team would outwork him. You know, you go down the list, Dwayne Carter, three-time team captain at Duke. That's pretty smart, right? That's pretty impressive. And so I think there was a lot of that. And I think these kind of go together a little bit. What I was saying before about getting younger doesn't have to be as a bad thing. Getting some fresh voices in the locker room doesn't have to be a bad thing either, because I think there was some, let me think of how I could describe this. I think there was a level of disappointment / frustration with some of the veterans who were here who have understandably done a lot for this organization, have taken the team very, very far. They have not been able, obviously, to get, you know, over the biggest hurdle, you know, the biggest remaining hurdle to beat the Chiefs, to win the AFC Championship, ultimately to get to the Super Bowl. Four straight AFC East championships is very impressive, but it leaves fans wanting more. You want the next thing, right? And I think for some of those veterans who came here and helped turn this thing around, I think knowing that there was some disappointment from the fans and knowing that, hey, like what has to happen for you guys to get to where you need to get to? I think there was a level of, I don't know if frustration is the right word, but I think there was maybe a little bit of a disillusionment from some of those veterans. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to say that the well was poisoned necessarily, but when you can't get over the hump, you know, I think that does lead to a natural sense of frustration within that locker room. And it's turned over significantly. Six of the eight team captains from last year, guys, are no longer here. That's crazy, right? I mean, that is, so there are going to be a lot of new voices stepping up in that locker room, maybe even some of these rookies. And I think new voices doesn't necessarily have to be a bad thing, the same way that youth doesn't have to be a bad thing.
Yeah, super good talking with Jay Skirsky. We've got one more question. We've kept you longer than I said we would keep you. So, Jay, thank you so much for your time
and I'm long.
Yeah, thank you for giving it to us.
My question real quick is
I want him to tell us where everybody can find him. So before we ask you the last question, tell everybody where we can find you and all that good stuff.
Oh, sure. X is just my name, at Jay Skirsky. That's JaySKursky. And then you can just go to buffalonews.com and find my author page and see everything that I'm doing over there.
Real quick, Jay, last question. You can keep it brief. But was it really, really important for McDermott to name Bobby Babbage Jr. the DC, go with Joe Brady, another younger guy, knowing that they're going to have to do this youth movement? Because I don't know how you feel. I don't know if McDermott has ever really proven that he's much of a young guy coach. Mm-hmm. Can he be a successful head coach with a young team that's inexperienced, because he's tended to hold those rookies back a while before he lets them play?
Yeah, I love the question. And if you talk to my editor, being brief and me do not dovetail at all. I'll try my best. I think, and this is actually something I talked with Tyler Dunn on his podcast about, and I really like the point. I don't know that 5 years ago, Sean McDermott would have named Joe Brady offensive coordinator and Bobby Babbage defensive coordinator. I don't know that he would have been able to be in a position where he could have trusted young coaches the way that he's trusting these two. And they are a much different style than Sean McDermott. They are high energy all the time. That's what you hear from every player about Babbage especially, but Brady too, to maybe a little bit lesser degree, but especially Babbage. And what it says to me, it shows an evolution, quite frankly, on Sean McDermott's part about being willing to embrace that, about trusting, you know, his coaches and elevating them into more of positions of authority. And I think that's going to free up Sean to maybe be more of the overseer, more of the CEO type. And I think that's a good thing. I think it shows a lot that he's able to trust younger coaches. And guys, I think that has a trickle down. We saw last year, this team trusted rookies more than it really has in the past. You know, I think especially of Osiris Torrence going in, winning the job against Ryan Bates, a guy that was a veteran, a guy that got a pretty nice contract. And they said, no, Osiris Torrence is better. We're starting him in week one, and he's going to play every single snap. Well, I think they're in a position now where you look at these 10 draft picks, and we talked at the beginning, they're going to rely on a lot of these guys. And I think Sean McDermott has evolved to the point where he's going to be more comfortable with that. And guys, that's okay. Listen, Kansas City won back-to-back Super Bowls relying on a ton of rookies. So I'm good with these rookies coming in week one and playing, maybe learning on the job. But I think it's okay to trust young players in this league. And I think the Bills, whether it's by necessity or whether it's by a natural evolution of their coach, I think they're going to do more of that. And I think that can be a good thing.
That's awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, you have been tuned into On the Beat, brought to you on the Overreaction Sports Network. My name is Joe Miller. That over there is Jerry Ostrowski. That was Jay Skirsky. For me, for Jerry, for John, for Jay, thank you guys so much for joining us. Jay, thank you for being here. Appreciate it.
Brilliant. Yeah, man. All right. Hopefully I didn't keep you guys too long. I appreciate it.
No, great. Not at all.
Yeah.
So thank you so much.
If you're open to it, we're going to keep doing this every single week, and we'll keep you like round robin rotation. We'd love to have you on again, especially like when the season starts to kick in and stuff like that. So thank you.
Anytime, guys.
Awesome. As I said, for me, for John, for Jerry, for Jay, we'll talk to you guys later. Go Bills.
Go Bills.